What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single weekend, jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, and I'm going to just go right out and say it. This might be one of my favorite episodes I'm going to record, and I haven't even started. We have two new movie reviews that I'm going to get into. The first one, Superman, saw that yesterday, and Weapon, saw that yesterday. They are two absolute blockbuster movies taking over the theater scene, and I was able to go see them with my buddies. And let me just tell you, I have my thoughts on both of those films. Also, instead of talking about new UFC fights to open up the episode today, we're going to be talking about the first episode of Dana White's Contender Series, where I'm actually going to start making predictions. I just forgot to do that on the last episode. So we're going to be recapping the first episode, because I swear every first episode sucks so bad and it pisses Dana off. And when Dana is pissed, it makes it so entertaining. And then the main appetizer, the reason you're all going to be listening to this, UFC 319 goes down this Saturday. I'm pumped. Let me just tell you, I'm going to be in person at the Ignite fights at Canterbury Park watching my friend Jimmy fight and a bunch of other people from his gym. One of my friends, Casey, he practices MMA there, and he's like, hey, let's go watch. I'm like, hell yes, I am in to go watch that. So I will probably be very hectic on Saturday. I don't know if I'm going to be covering the fights a ton, so I figured I'd record this today. It is Wednesday the 13th. Gonna try and get this out actually on the same day, because UFC 319 is going down and it is a blockbuster, so we won't waste any time. I cannot wait to get into that. But first, we got a couple of things to go through. First off, kicking off the episode, so no new UFC fights. Dana White said on the Dana White's Contender Series press conference that, hey, don't worry, we got a bunch of fights coming out in the next 1 to 2 weeks, and even that the White House event is a go. But we're going to start with Dana White's Contender Series 9.1, if you want to call it Season 9, Episode 1, and it was something. It happened. I think that is what people say. Oh, there was a fight. It happened. That's what they do. So, 5 fights went down, 2 contracts were handed out, and a lot of criticism was given from Dana White. Starting things off, Yuri Panferov taking on Chris Ewart. And Yuri Panferov winning a 30-27 unanimous decision. I completely predicted this, saw this coming. The Russian polar bear gets it done, but not in very impressive fashion. Outstruck Chris 65-51. Significantly 4 of 7 on takedowns for 8.5 minutes, and just never really showed that, what do you want to call it, like killer instinct, if you will. And this was a guy who had lost to Torres Finney 2 seasons ago on season 7. He had been submitted by Torres Finney, and this is just not how you bounce back. And Chris Ewart clearly was not ready for the UFC. He was, of course, missed weight drastically when he was supposed to take on, I'm trying to think, Jackson McVeigh, I think he was supposed to take him on. So I don't know, this was just bad, and Dana White said he just didn't really see it out there. But he said, hey, go out there, get some wins. Yuri's 9-1, not too bad. And as for Chris, he's going to be 7-1. This is his first professional defeat, so both guys could easily go out there, string some wins. And Yuri, he is in his late 20s. I think he's 28 right now. He turns 29 later this month, and if he can string together some wins, they'll probably invite him back next season. But here, he just didn't show it. Next up, this one might have been the worst. It might have been the worst, but the main event was also really bad. Featherweight division here, as Radley Da Silva grapples George Mangos to death. 29-28, 29-28, and 29-28. He goes 6 of 6 on takedowns for 9.5 minutes of control time. George Mangos, fun last name of Mangos, does manage to get just under 4 minutes of control time himself. Now, in this fight, only 4 significant strikes landed by Radley Da Silva. 3 in round 1, 0 in round 2, 3 in round 3. And he just grappled just under 4 minutes in round 1, just under 4 minutes in round 2, gets reversed in round number 3, and just never really tried for anything. And Dana White even said, don't just waste the viewer's time, don't just waste my time, you're wasting your own time. And that is just exactly what went down. And Radley, he's 8-1, he's still good, but if he's going to come back, he's going to need to come back with some fire. And as for George Mangos, he'll be 7-1. So not too bad, but dude has zero takedown defense. Actually, he is going to have, when he comes back on the Contender Series or to the UFC, if he ever makes it, he's going to enter with a 0% takedown defense. I mean, 6 of 6, just awful. And yeah, first 4 fighters on this card, 0 contracts going to them. But the star of the show, this could be the next Joe Pyfer, the next Sean O'Malley, the next Jamal Hill, the next big star coming out of the Contender Series. It's Bansanger Susurkayev, and he does not have an easy name to pronounce. pronounce, which is always kind of a bummer. But, well, BS, nickname, what's his nickname? Hunter. Oh my gosh, Bysander Sursikov. Okay, the Hunter, if you will, was hunting indeed. 3 minutes into round number one, one liver kick is all it takes. I even delivered, dude. It was literally just like to the middle of his stomach, hit Murtaza Talha with it, and Murtaza went down. Let me just say Murtaza Talha. Two chances on Contender Series, knocked out both of them. So, very unfortunate for Murtaza. You will not be making it to the UFC. But I knew this guy would get it done. I'm pretty sure he trains with Khamzat. And there was, like, footage of him training with Khamzat. Dude's an absolute savage. Actually, maybe there's another guy training with Khamzat. I don't know. But Bysander Sursikov, an absolute killer. And by the way, when he hit him with it, so he kicks him in the body. Literally just a front kick right to the gut. And Talha goes right down. And he goes in for a follow-up shot, but then resists. And he glides right over him. Like, he walks right over them and as Talha's in a huddle-up position. And I kid you not, UFC 319 is under 4 days away. And they are trying to get Bysander on that card. Dude, they are in love with this guy. Dana White said this is maybe one of his favorite fighters he's had on here in a while. And let me just tell you, I am pumped to see what this guy has to deliver. He's coming in 9-0, 8 finishes all in round one. He hasn't had a fight go past. He's had like 4 or 5 fights. I think it's almost crazy. Like, he has like the least amount of ring time of like anyone that we've seen in a while. So Bysander Sursikov, middleweight division, look out. They're going to try and break him in. People were saying Cody Brundage. People were saying Trayshawn Gore. They're going to try and set this guy up for a big UFC debut. After that, the co-main event, if you really want to call it that, but it's not really a co-main event, it's just the order of the belts. Ty Miller, Jimmy Drago, and with a name like Jimmy Drago, I think everyone thought Jimmy was going to get done, but Ty Miller shows the dog in him and wins this one. And Dana said, you know what, they're going to try and give him to the Performance Institute, they're going to give him a contract, and they're going to get him a UFC fight. Ty Miller gets a contract, good for him. Ty Miller coming in, I mean, the kid's only 24 years old. Actually, turned 25. He turned 25 on June 4th. And, you know, not too bad. Record of 6-0, 1-0 contest. And really showed heart in this one. Was taken down in round two. Was able to deal with that. Dealing with the clinch work. Outstruck Jimmy 84-57 significantly. Really good work. And as for Jimmy Drago, he's going to be 7-3 now. So not a real pretty record. But the UFC was kind of just like, hey, you know what? I still think you got this. But you just need to go on the independent scene. Win 3 of 4 fights. Come back 10-3, 11-3. And show us what you got. But Ty Miller, props to him. He was the only pick I got wrong. I rode with Jimmy Drago. And yeah, good stuff for Ty Miller. Then we got to the main event, and it was screwy. It sucked. And this really fired up Dana White for saying, like, don't waste your own time showing up here. It sucked. It sucked. And the judges' scorecards were all over the place. 30-26, 29-27, and a 29-27. And Dana White even said, and the internet said, he had it 28-28. So we open round number one. And Ian Bofaya is taking on Nemias Santana. And Ian Bofaya wins round one and also gets hit with an illegal headbutt by Nemias Santana. What then proceeds to happen? Nemias then, what most people thought would have won the last two rounds. Instead, one judge gives the last two to Ian. I mean, by the way, Ian only landed 3 significant strikes in round number 3. Totals for the fight, 30 significant strikes to 25, 0-2 on takedowns for Nemias Santana. It was rough. It was rough, but Ian Bofaya improves to 7-0. I think there's videos of him with Khamzat Chimaev's crew after someone else won from their UAE group, wherever you want to call it, but Dana White was not happy. So, shows a little pity on Ty Miller for having that dog in him, but the real star, Bysander Sursikov, he's all you need to know about. So, for episode 1, Bysander Sursikov steals the day. Ian Bofaya, Radley De Silva, Yuri Panfirov, all eating some harsh criticism from Dana White. But that's all we got for episode 1 of Dana White's Contender Series. Next 10 weeks, we are going to be covering this now that I actually remembered it's going down. And by the way, it started at like 6 p.m. It was kind of crazy. People were like, oh, the fights are already going on. So that was fun. That was good. And I actually started watching these fights. I was able to catch the Bysander finish after I finished watching a Superman. That is right, ladies and gentlemen. I finally got around to seeing what some people are calling the best superhero film of the year. Was it? You'll you'll have to listen to my quick little review. But yeah, it was a very good movie. It had that James Gunn twist, whatever you want to call it, his little touch on it. And it really did give me Guardians of the Galaxy vibes at times, and I really liked that. I liked how it kind of mixed in the DC animation, like from the CW, mixing in with the modern-day animation, mixing in the Suicide Squad, and it just all combined together to be very visually appealing. David Cornsweet was an amazing Superman, and one of the things with this Superman is it really dealt with him overcoming, you know, a lot of things. Like, he was overcoming his humanity, and, like, he was overcoming the fact that his parents didn't send him there for justice and peace, but to rule the planet and to create powerful offspring. And the villain, Lex Luthor, was literally just evil, and he was just obsessed with Superman. He didn't even need, like, an actual motive, but, I mean, The cast on this was amazing. Nicholas Holt is Lex Luthor. I mean, I'm a huge Nicholas Holt fan, you know. I don't know him personally, so, you know, I'm just a fan from afar, but everything he's in, I'm loving. Rachel Brosnan playing Lois, she was good. I could feel the connection between them both and kind of how Lois isn't really good with relationships and Superman doesn't know if it'll work, and then in the end, it works and it's good. And the comedy throughout this too, it's so funny, because you have, oh my gosh, what's his name? This is going to kill me. Pull up the cast list right now. Jimmy Olsen, that's right. Skylar Gisondo, one of my favorite actors. He was in, was it We're the Millers? No, it's not We're the Millers. He was in Vacation. He was also in The Righteous Gemstones. Dude's an absolutely hilarious guy. Him and the Wendell Pierce was playing, like, the editor of the Daily Planet or whatever. And they're like, Lois is like, I'm gonna go get an interview from Superman. And they're like, oh, how long have those two been tracking up? But it's just that dumb little humor like that. Or there's a scene where Mr. Terrific, who was played by Eddie Gathegi, he was fantastic in this as well. Or you could even say he was terrific. And he is, he's like going to bring Lois and him to go save Superman. And he's like, I have a super ship. And they go to the super ship and it's at, like, this storage unit. And the door to open opens super slowly. It's just that dumb James Gunn humor that I could almost compare him to Takiya Waititi, where Takiya overdoes it and James does just the right amount. Isabella Mercedes, she plays Hot Girl. She was great in this. Nathan Fillion as Green Lantern might have stole the day. His name's Guy, too. I mean, oh my goodness, Nathan's great. And what I love is that Green Lantern, they made him as powerful as he is, but they also made him like a comedic character who I could take serious, I could take unserious. Really worked. Millie Alcock briefly appears at the end as Supergirl. I'm sure they'll give her their own little, you know, stunt or whatever you want to call it. You're also able to see but not see Alan Tudyk as a Superman robot. I don't know if he was just the voice or whatever, but he was fun to see in that. And yeah, a lot of good cast. A lot of people where you see them and you're like, wait a second, I know him. Like seeing Beck Bennett as Steve Lombard, just like a little comedic character. It was good. It was really good. I was impressed with this movie and the people. People are saying IMDb 7.5, Rotten Tomatoes 83%, Letterboxd 3.9 out of 5. It's going to get an 8 out of 10 for me. Good movie. A good movie. And, you know, I wish I would have seen this after Weapons, because I won't lie, when you leave Superman, you get this sense of goodness, this sense of great feeling, and it's positivity. And the end credit scenes doesn't set up anything big. You know, they're just two little fun, little teaser, little just like whatever end credit scenes, and it doesn't need to be anything more than it is. Perfect length, perfect filming, everything was great about this, and after seeing it, I'm like, you know what, I'm ready to see me some more Superman. And where does David rank in terms of all the other Supermans we've seen in the past? I think he's in the upper echelon, you know? There's like a lot of things where he's saving animals, he's saving people just at the last second, he's all about saving people and doing good, and him being Clark Kent is also pretty hilarious, so Superman, 8 out of 10, highly recommended. Go see it. I feel like it's really good on the big screen. And I won't lie, there are some times where scenes are going on for a while, and you're kind of like, oh, this is really going on for a while. But, you know, it's also building his backstory. It's adding an emotional element instead of just bam, bam, smash, 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 which when we look back on it is actually pretty good. So Superman gets an 8 out of 10 for me. It was very enjoyable. Now, on to the hit horror thriller mystery film everyone's talking about. That's right, it is Weapons, of course. The entire thing is when all but one child from the same classroom mysteriously vanish on the same night at exactly the same time. A community is left questioning who or what is behind their disappearance. And this was wonky. This was a weird, weird film. I mean, let me just tell you, there were times where I'm just like, what am I watching? First off, Julie Garner, Josh Brolin, Benedict Wong, Amy Madigan, Austin Abrams. This cast was great. This was a fire cast. I got Austin Abrams, he was great in this as well. Alden Ehrenreich, Toby Huss, you know, Clayton Ferris, every cast member in this was super good. But, you know, this is a spoiler. Spoiler review. You know, Superman, I don't need to tell you anything. You know, there doesn't really make spoilers you can give. Like, obviously, Superman's going to win in the end. But for this movie, you know, Weapons, it really, you have no idea what's going on. You know, you have no idea what's going on, and it opens with all the kids just running out of their homes, and you have this eerie little girl narrating it, and it's creepy. It's creepy. It's set in this vibe, and you're like, this makes no sense. And then it starts following our main character, who, of course, played by Julie Garner, Justine. And Justine is the teacher, and people are calling her a witch, which we should have known when they were calling her a witch that the actual villain in the movie is a witch. So, yeah, there was that. Then, so it goes through her perspective of everything that's happening. She's, of course, hooking up with this cop, and then it switches to Josh Brolin's perspective. And Josh Brolin pulls up on her, you know, he's one of the dad of the kids that went missing. Josh Brolin's fantastic at this. Like, his range of acting is so versatile. It's very impressive. And he pulls up on her, and then Wong, that is right, Benedict Wong, Wong from the MCU, shows up, and he's like the principal of the school, and he tries to kill her, and then Josh Brolin saves her, and et cetera, goes on, goes on, goes on. So then those two are like, what's going on? Where did he come from? Then you find out about the cop. And the cop, who she's been hooking up with, eventually arrests a druggie. You know, this little druggie, and he is going all over the place. What was his name, actually? The druggie's James. James. He arrests James, and James accidentally pokes him with a needle. And so he's chasing him, and then he accidentally is like, okay. He punches him. He's like, I can't turn the body cam off. So going through all that. And eventually we get to the big moment of the film. The big moment of the film is when James breaks into the little boy's house. Now, like I said, the entire premise of the movie is all but one kid goes missing. And you learn it's at that one kid's house is where all the kids are. And it's weird because his parents are just like eerily still. And, you know, so he breaks in there and he's trying to rob them of everything. And then he manages to escape. But when he escapes, he gets caught by the same cop who he had accidentally poked with a needle. And those two go to investigate, and they are then trapped there. They are then hexed, or whatever, if you will, by the witch. So yes, the entire villain of this, if this is a spoiler, by the way, is, of course, Amy Madigan's character, Gladys Lily. Aunt Gladys comes to live with, oh my gosh, what was the little boy's name? Let me go. I cannot remember the names. You know, you watch so many movies and you just completely evades you. Is it Thomas? Mr. Lee? They don't even have the kids listed on here. I have to find out the child's name. Now, I cannot continue unless I figure out the child's name. Alex, that's right, Alex. So Alex is, of course, the lone kid that is left, and his aunt had come to stay with them, and she's dying of cancer, and she needs to basically use, all I can think of is the life force out of the kids and out of his parents to, you know, keep herself alive. And she is basically a witch, and she gets an item of clothing, she picks her blood, puts this in a bowl, and she has like this magical thorn bush tree, and she can hex them and take them over and use them as her weapons. That is right. That's the whole premise of the film. And the scariest moments of this were honestly in dreams that Justine and Josh Brolin's character were having when they saw the face of Gladys. You know, she is like this weird, like clownish makeup, almost just weird hair, and there were jump scares with her. That was the scariest moments of the film. Now, they go, finally, Josh Brolin and Justine, or Julie Garner, they finally figure out, okay, this is where the kids are being held. Something's going on in this house. They break in. Little do they know, the druggie and Paul, who I think his name was Paul. I can't remember his name, but, or James, who is the cop she was hooking up with, are under her spell, and they try and kill her, and then she unfortunately has to kill the detective James, or the police officer, or whatever, and that's a super emotional moment for her. And then the big finale of this film, so the buildup, I will say, yeah, I'm all over the place, but this movie is in three acts. Act one, act two, long. Act three feels rushed. It's like kind of like, we don't know what's going on. Oh, they're trying to solve everything. Then, boom, it's a witch, it's Gladys, and they catch her, and yeah, that's literally, like, Act 3 feels so rushed. I feel like Act 1 and Act 2 take up, out of the 2 hours and 8 minutes of this movie, they take up about an hour and 40 minutes. So the final 28 minutes is the climax of the film, which just isn't enough when we're looking at a 2 hour, 8 minute movie. So they go there, and then eventually it is Alex, the little boy, who's been trying to save his parents, but Gladys has been scaring him, saying that she'll kill his parents if they do. And, you know, what he ends up doing is he ends up using the bowl with blood and, you know, poking himself and gathering a piece of Gladys's hair, and he turns all of the kids she kidnapped against him. And you get this hilarious final scene. It reminds you of Barbarian when they're out running on the street, because this is from the same guy who wrote Barbarian, which his style of movies, you know, if I'm going to watch a scary movie, I'm going to watch his type of movies. So props to the director. Let me give him out. Zach Krieger. Oh my gosh, we share the same name. You know, he's a producer, screenplay director. He does it all. And, you know, the final scene of the movie is all the kids just chasing after Gladys, and they're breaking through glass of houses. It's this hilarious chase, and they finally get to her, and they legit rip her to shreds. It was so vulgar, it was so brutal, and it felt so rewarding. And it ends with just Josh Brolin hugging his son, who he had, you know, not told he loved enough, and that was super emotional. And then it's this little narration from the little girl, and she's like, and Alex's parents, you know, they never talked again. Some of the kids were starting to talk, and it just ends. And there's no end credits scene, there's no nothing, it just ends. And it's kind of just, it's an abrupt ending, you know? And I almost would have rather, you know, my friend Seth, he was like, I thought that they weren't going to actually find her, and that Gladys was going to escape with Alex, and we're going to get, like, weapons too. But I think with what Zach Krieger goes for is one movie, one story concludes it all. And with the debut of Barbarians and now the success of Weapons, I'm curious to see what his next film is. But this one, you know, I don't really know what to give it. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. You know, I'm giving it a 7 out of 10. I'm so interested, as we reach the final 4 months of the year, what movies are going to make it into my top 10 movies I saw of the year. And I'm curious if I'm going to put this in it, but I just don't know. I just don't know. This was weird. It left me with a lot of weird feelings. And it's kind of like, as a Christian, you know, once I found out that's like, oh, she's a witch, I'm just like, oh, you know, that's the villain. And they're obviously going to beat her and kill her. But yeah, the entire premise of this movie, this lady is using demonic energy to inhabit people, which I'm sure people can do. It's almost like remote viewing, but remote controlling, if you will. But yeah, there was some funny moments in this. I mean, the theater experience was fun. I do say watching this in a theater is definitely more fun. Watching this with other people so that when you see scenes, like, everyone's just laughing at things, and it was a good time. So 7 out of 10 for me. Weapons is something that I think everyone should experience, because I don't want to be the only one that's ever experienced this movie. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into the cream, the crop, the main event, the main sauce, the dessert of the desserts. I don't even know what I'm saying. UFC 319. That is right. I'm pumped for this. I'm jonesing. I am just so happy this is going down. It is going to be fantastic. Driscus Duplessis, Hamza Chimaev for the middleweight championship. It's going to be great. I was actually linked to this event for a while going in person, but unfortunately, timing, ticket prices, me not having any work or money, yeah, I just couldn't end up going. But I'm still able to watch it and enjoy it. My Saturday's actually going to be so hectic. I have no idea what's going to go down, so I'm actually very confused how I'm going to be able to watch this and, you know, go to a fantasy football draft and go watch Jimmy's fight. You know, there's a lot of moving pieces, which I'm going to need to work around. So with that, let's not waste any more time. Let's dive right into our official UFC 319 predictions. And we kick things off with, I mean, they don't even have these officially up on the UFC's stats page, but you have your two Ultimate Fighter finales. You're going to have, I think, it's either a middleweight or I think it's a featherweight even, maybe, matchup, and then a flyweight matchup. So they have the flyweight matchup up, but they don't have the feather middle, whatever the frick these dudes fight at. But I was able to see the finish of one of the guys who is in the fight that we're talking about, and we're going to do a quick predictions for that, because I have to do predictions. These are going to go down, but as I'm recording this, they don't have this updated. So the first matchup, I think they're featherweights. I think they're featherweights, but I'm going to be honest, I have no freaking clue. But you have Rodrigo Cencianito taking on Daniil Danchenko. And funny enough, Rodrigo Cencianito, I could not find his age anywhere. We have no idea how old this guy is. But for Danny Danchenko, he is 24 years old. We have no words. That, like, even Tapeology is like, yeah, I got no idea who these guys are. Rodrigo, 8-1. Daniil Danchenko, 11-2. This is the most unorthodox picks I've made probably since I began making picks on episode one. But Rodrigo, he's from Rio de Janeiro. He's on a 4-fight winning streak. Of his 8 wins, 7 finishes, 4 KOs and 3 subs. And he trains at Nuevo Unao, whatever. He trains at Jose Aldo's gym. So dude's clearly good. Won the flyweight matchup. I don't know if he got a finish or anything, but he's here. No, he's in the featherweight division. My goodness, I'm just all over the place with this. But good stuff for Rodrigo Cencianito. He's from Rio, trains at Jose Aldo's gym. He's fun. His opponent, though, I did just see his finish because it was all over my feed last night. 11-2, Daniil Danchenko, 24 years old, from Ukraine, on a 4-fight winning streak of his 11 wins, 7 KOs, and 2 subs. And he got a dominant win to win the Ultimate Fighter. I guess not win it, but to move to the finals, fighting on UFC 319. So, little quick prediction here. You know, Rodrigo trains with Jose Aldo, but I was able to see Daniil Danchenko's finish. He looked cool, and I like cool finishes. So we're going to go with Daniil Danchenko. I almost didn't want to make these picks, but I'm like, you know what? I got to make the picks, even if I have no prior knowledge of these guys, because I know about every fighter on this. Actually, I do know every single fighter on the UFC 319 card, except for these Ultimate Fighters. So Daniil Danchenko over Rodrigo Cencianito. I hope it's a round one finish of some regard. Now, on to the flyweight matchup, which, you know, UFC stats has given us a bit of knowledge. Joseph Morales is 13-2. Alibe Idris is 11-0. And Joseph Morales used to fight in the UFC. He had a round one rear naked choke in 2017, then got knocked out by Deiveson Figueiredo in 2018, then lost a split decision in 2018 before being cut. So Joseph has a little bit of UFC experience. For Joseph, he's 5'6", 69-inch reach. He has a switch stance. Alibe has an orthodox stance, and they are both 30 years old for both of our fighters. Kazakhstan for Alibe, he's 11-0, 4 KOs, 1 sub. Yeah, he is your stereotypical Eastern European fighter. As for Joseph, 30 years old from Cali, he's on a 3-fight winning streak and has 8 finishes, 2 KOs, and 6 subs. Look, Joseph appears to be on a tear. He's 13-2. He's rebounding from his 1-2 UFC days, 8 years ago. But, yeah, we're riding with the undefeated Alibe Idris. Dude just seems like an absolute killer, and when I have little knowledge on people, I'm gonna go with a Kazakhstan, who's 11-0. So, yeah, we're gonna go with Alibe Idris to wrap up our little Ultimate Fighter predictions. I do not watch the Ultimate Fighter anymore. I was actually thinking about doing this fun segment on one of our upcoming episodes where I look at this new era, season 29 to season 33, I think it is, of The Ultimate Fighter, at just how no real stars are being born. Like, the biggest I've seen is Brian Battle. That's been the biggest, and by the way, he was the first return season with Volkan Ortega. Since then, no one. Even the winners just aren't doing good. But now that we got that out of the way, let's get into our official UFC picks. So, kicking off the card, women's flyweight. I guess these are kicking off the card, but women's flyweight division. I'm moving on with our picks. Karine Killer Silva and Dione the Witch Barbosa. Let me just say, with a nickname like the Witch, I just watched a movie about a witch who got absolutely murked. So you already know I'm picking Karine Silva. Do I have to continue? Yeah. I do have to continue. Karine Silva, 18-5. Dione, 8-3. 5'6 to 5'5. 1 inch in height for Dione and 1 inch in reach for Karine. 67 to 66. Orthodox stance for both of our ladies. Starting off, Karine Silva, minus 170. She is a ranked woman in the women's flyweight division, coming in at number 11. She was on an absolute tear. No, she was on like a 9-fight winning streak. She was 4-0 in the UFC before she ran into Vivian Araújo in November. Wins round one and then drops the final two. Embarrassing. Very embarrassing. Mind you, I watched Vivian Araújo lose to Tracy Cortez and they literally cut her because they're like, she's just so boring. And for Karine Silva to get humbled by her, it is something else entirely. Karine is 31 years old from Paraná, Brazil, and actually fights out of the Fighting Nerds now. She has migrated to fight out of the Fighting Nerds. 17 of her 18 wins are by finish, 9 KOs and 8 subs. Actually, the other way around. Of her 5 defeats, she's been finished 3 times. This is actually a rematch between these two before going on her 8 or 9 fight winning streak, which just recently lost last November. Her last defeat It was to Diona Barbosa. So this is personal for Karine Silva. She's looking to get her lick back. And will she? I don't know. As she takes on the plus 145 underdog, Diona Barbosa. 33 years old from Minas Gerais, Brazil. She has 4 subs of her 8 victories. And of her 3 defeats, she's been KO'd 1 time. She's currently coming in 2-1 in the UFC. Win over Ernesta Karachea. Coming off win over Diana Balbida in April. And her 1 loss is to Miranda Maverick. Yeah. You know, I will not pick Diona Barbosa with a nickname like the Witch. Plus, Karine Silva appears to be very freaking good. So we are going to go with Karine Silva to get the job done. I'm even going to go with a round one submission. Round one submission for Karine Silva. Locks in a guillotine choke and gets her out of there. Following that, middleweight division. The fact that this fight is so low down, this could be a co-main event on a fight night. I mean, the Butcher, Brian Battle against Nursultan Black Ruzaboyev in the middleweight division. This is a banger. This is a fantastic fight. I am pumped for this. Brian Battle, 13-2, 1 no contest. Nursultan Ruzaboyev, 36-9, 2 draws, 2 no contest. This dude has had so many fights, and guess what? He's only 31. He is 31 years old and has had, actually 49 fights. This will be his 50th professional fight. That's actually insane. Brian Battle, 6-1, Nursultan, 6-5, but 77 inches in reach for Brian, 76 for Nursultan. Both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. Plus 150 for Nursultan, minus 175 for Brian Battle. Brian's coming in as the favorite, and I'm not surprised. He's been on a pretty good run since joining the welterweight division. Brian is 30 years old from North Carolina. He's currently on a little 4-fight winning streak, 5-fight unbeaten streak, as he had that just stupid no contest. Should be on a 5-fight win streak, but stupid Angelusa. 4 KOs and 5 subs give him 9 of his 13 wins by finish, and he's only ever been submitted once of his 2 defeats. Brian is actually very good in the UFC, 7-1, only losses to Renat Fakhretdinov on short notice. He, of course, won the Ultimate Fighter, submitting Gilbert Urbina. He would then beat Trace John Gore before having a 44-second knockout of Takashi Sato. After that defeat to Renat Fakhretdinov, he has been on a run, knocking out Gabe Green in 14 seconds, submitting AJ Fletcher in round 2, knocking out Kevin Jussett in Paris, and most recently beating Randy Brown to end out December. That was a split decision, and that was very close. So as he continues to get better, he's going to get better competition, and Randy Brown was that first taste of, okay, this is going to be a tough run if Brian Battle wants to make it into the rankings. And in that matchup, you know, if round 1, Randy, round 2, Brian, came down to that final round, and Brian Battle having some clinch time on the cage is what really got it done for him. But Brian, it just gets tougher from here, and it's getting tougher as he takes on Black Nursultan Ruzaboyev. This dude's scary, man. 31 years old, from Uzbekistan, but now trains out of Philadelphia at the same gym as the great Joe Pyfer. We love Joe Pyfer on here. Of his 36 wins, 33 finishes, 13 KOs, and 20 subs. Dude's insane. Dude's insane. He's only ever been finished twice out of his 9 defeats. And what was one more little stat? He only has 1 loss in the last 6 years, and that was in May of last year to Joaquin Buckley. But since then, I mean, besides that, he is 4-1 in the UFC. Knockouts of Bruno Ferreira, Cedric Dumas, and Eric McConkow. Now, he did fight in May and took on Dustin Stolfus. And that fight was, I mean, it went the distance, it happened, but not his most impressive performance. So Nursultan coming in with some momentum. It's tough to say what you're going to get here. Okay, I'm a big Nursultan fan, big Brian Battle fan, and especially when it comes to underdogs, especially when it comes to what I've seen recently, you know, Nursultan beating a guy in Dustin Stolfus and not being able to finish him isn't very promising, I'll say that, but more than often not, he does get the finish. So I actually think I'm going to ride with Nursultan Ruzaboyev to beat Brian Battle in this contest. So Nursultan over Brian, and we'll say by decision. I feel like he's going to go on a little decision streak before he ramps up and gets a win. But if Brian pulls it off, I won't be too surprised. So Nursultan over Brian is my official prediction, though. Moving on to the lightweight division, Edson Barbosa back. And the lightweight division, Junior is back, and he is a favorite. Minus 150 as he takes on Jakar Klaus at plus 130. Edson 24-12. Jakar 15-3-1. 5'11 to 5'9. 2 inches in height for Edson. 5 inches in reach as well. Wow, 75-70. Orthodox stance for both of our gentlemen. Edson Man, love this guy. Edson Barboza, legend of the UFC. He's 39 years old now, man. That's absolutely crazy. Born in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, now lives out of Florida. Of his 24 wins, 13 KOs, 2 subs. Weird to think Edson getting a sub. That is just such an odd thought. Of his 12 defeats, he's been finished 6 times, 4 by knockout, 1 by sub, or 2 by submission. He actually had a fight linked to Steve Garcia in Seattle. Thankfully, he didn't take that. Last time he fought, main event in May of 2024 against Lerone Murphy. He's actually on a 2-fight fight of the night streak and a 3-fight bonus streak. Ivy, dude's been on a killing spree. Been with the UFC for 15 years now. Absolute legend. He's taken on Ross Pearson, Donald Cerrone, King Green, Michael Johnson, Paul Felder, Tony Ferguson, Anthony Pettis, Gilbert Melendez, Beneil Dariush, Khabib, Kevin Lee, Dan Hooker, Justin Gaethje, Paul Felder, Dan Ige. This dude has been on killer's row. Last 3 defeats, Giga Chikadze in his prime, Bryce Mitchell in his prime, and most recently, Lerone Murphy. So honestly, when I look at this, Edson Barboza has only lost to top-tier talent. Even going past that into 2019, fight of the night loss to Justin Gaethje in a fight that lasted 2.5 minutes. Is that not saying a 2.5-minute fight of the night? Never heard of that. Split decision loss to Paul Felder. Split decision loss to Dan Ige. Still have no idea how he lost that. That was absolute BS. Edson Barboza, legend of the game, some of the best knockouts you'll ever see. Love him. His opponent, Jakar Close, coming in 37 years old from Arizona, trains out of the MMA lab, some places Cannoneer, Cejudo, those guys. And of his 15 wins, 6 KOs. Of his 3 defeats, he's been knocked out twice. And those 2 defeats have came in his last 2 losses. Debuted in 2017, and from 2020 to 2017, I mean, he was racking up fights. He had 6 fights. He was doing pretty good. Screw that, guys. He had 7 fights. Wow. And then, of course, he lost to Beneil Dariush. That would derail his career for 2 years before coming back and going on a 4-fight winning streak, including a slam finish of Joe Selecki in 2023 and a win over Joaquim Silva in May of 2024. Last time he fought in December, Joe Alvarez absolutely destroyed him with a knee in 2 minutes and 48 seconds and absolutely laid into him. So, Jakar Close coming off a nasty loss in December. It's been over a year since we've seen Edson Barboza fight, actually close to a year and 3 months, essentially. But, you know, I'm still riding with Edson Barboza. I think when I look at skill level and I think when I look at this guy being 39, it still doesn't faze me. Edson has more skills, more assets, and I think you get a classic Edson Barboza, beautiful knockout. And I'm going to even go as bold to say round number 1. So we're riding with Edson Barboza here over Jakar Close. Big Edson Barboza fan on this podcast. After that, we stick with the lightweight division as Chase the Dream Hooper takes on Alexander the Great Ape Hernandez. Still one of the dumbest nicknames I've ever seen. 16-3-1 for Chase Hooper, 16-8 for Hernandez. 6'1" to 5'9". Got some height for Chase Hooper. 2 inches in reach as well for the kids. 74-72 southpaw with the left for Hooper. Orthodox with the right for Hernandez. -290 for Chase Hooper. +200 for Alexander the Great Ape Hernandez. Yeah, Chase Hooper, 25 years young from Washington, the state. 5-5 winning streak. I mean, since moving up from featherweight to lightweight, he has been on a tear. It has been ridiculous. 4 KOs and 8 subs give him 12 of his 16 wins by finish. And of his 3 defeats, he's only ever been finished once. And it was his last defeat, October 2022, when he lost to Steve Garcia. Might I say that guy is now ranked at number... Where do they have Steve? Steve's number 12 in the men's featherweight division. He should be higher. Steve Garcia is a killer, but... Chase Hooper, been with the UFC since 2019, fought on the Contender Series in 2018. That is right, he fought on the Contender Series when he was only 18 years old. After that, I mean, dude, kind of went through it. His losses, Alex Caceres, that was a tough one. Steven Pearson, that one's an L. And then, of course, the Steve Garcia one was rough. Dropped 3 times in a minute and 32 seconds, but... moves up to lightweight, dominates Nick Fiore, submits Jordan Leavitt, destroys Vyacheslav Borsov, might have been the biggest mauling I've ever seen, and beats Clay Guida by armbar in under 4 minutes. He's had 1 fight this year in April where he beat Jim Miller in handsome fashion. Chase Hooper has been on a tear. He's looking to extend his win streak to 6, and he looks to do it against Alexander Hernandez. Alex Hernandez, got to be the biggest what-if cases in the UFC. 32 years old from San Antonio. I will say, I can't believe this fight isn't on Noche being in San Antonio, but no, that just speaks to the fact they don't care about Alexander Hernandez at all. Alex is on a 2-fight winning streak. 8 of his 16 wins are by finish, 6 KOs and 2 subs. Of his 8 defeats, he's been finished 4 times, 3 by knockout, 1 by sub. Comes in, insane 42-second flying knee knock. Actually, it was a punch, actually, over Benil Dariush. All right, crazy. Then beats Olavier Aubin Mercier. And then ends up co-main eventing UFC Fight Night Cejudo versus Dillashaw against Donald Cerrone and gets humble beyond belief. You will see him versus Cerrone as one of the biggest UFC fighter gets humbled clips of all time. After that, picks up a win, then gets knocked out. Picks up a win, then loses a decision. Picks up a win, then drops 2 fights. Picks up a win, drops 2 fights. But now, 2-fight winning streak. Those wins are over Austin Hubbard and Kurt Holobaum. Not that most impressive, but Hernandez, he's been all right. You know, he's been doing okay. Did lose to Damon Jackson in 2024 by split decision. That was BS. So if I'm being honest, I'd have him at more of a 3-fight winning streak, 4-1 in his last 5. He hasn't done bad, but since coming into the UFC, he's never really gotten up to the level that most people thought he would get to. And by the way, he came in, you know, with only 1 defeat, and he's now at 8 defeats, so kind of says a little bit. I think Chase Hooper mauls him, submits him, round number 2. We're Chase Hooper fans here, and Alexander Hernandez is just not up to par. Might even go with a little Darce choke. A little Darce choke for Chase Hooper. I could see it. Moving on to our final women's matchup of the evening. Usually, I don't like women's matchups. You know, I'm not trying to be sexist or anything. I'm just saying that usually they're boring. But thankfully, here we have the number 5 ranked Jessica Andrade taking on the number 11th ranked Lupi Godinez. And this one should be pretty good, guys. Jessica Andrade is always entertaining when she fights. Bate Estaca is her nickname. 26-14. 40 professional fights. Wow, incredible stuff for Jessica. 13-5 for Lupi Godinez is her professional record. 5'2 to 5'1, 1 inch in height for Lupi, 1 inch in reach for Jessica, 62-61. Orthodox stance for both of these ladies. Yes, I mean, Jessica Andrade coming in at number 5. She is also ranked, I think, at number 9. Yes, in the women's flyweight division. She fights in 2 freaking divisions. She's the underdog somehow, being ranked number 5, plus 150 for her, minus 175 for Lupi. 33 years old from Paraná, Brazil. Of those 26 wins, 18 finishes, 10 KOs and 8 subs. Of her 14 defeats, she has been finished 10 times, 5 both ways. As of late, been kind of rough for Andrade. 2-fight losing streak, but 2-2 in her last 4, so not too bad. She's had an insane run. Insane run in the UFC. She's had one of the craziest careers I've ever seen. Debuts, loses to Liz Carmouche, goes on a 3-fight winning streak, then loses to Marion Renault, then wins, then loses, then goes on a 3-fight winning streak, gets a title shot against Joanna Janjacek, loses a decision, then goes on a 4-fight winning streak, including finish slamming Rose Namajunas to upset win the strawweight championship, then gets finished in 42 seconds by Zhang Wei Li, loses a fight of the night split decision to Rose Namajunas, then destroys Caitlin Cerminara, gets a title shot against Valentina Shevchenko, and gets destroyed in round 2 by that one. 3-fight winning streak there before going on a 3-fight losing streak. Mind you, that 3-fight losing streak in 2023, Aaron Blanchfield, Yan Cheonan, Tatiana Suarez. Yeah, that's literally, if you want to get super specific, her last 3 losses before her current losing streak. Actually, on her current losing streak, Jasmine Jess Davicius and Natalie Silva. The last six ladies to beat Jessica Andrade are the number 2 ranked woman strawweight, the number 3 ranked woman strawweight, the champion, flyweight champion, the number 1 contender in the flyweight division, the number 4 contender in the flyweight division, and the number 5 contender in the flyweight division. I mean, insane stuff. But she's back at strawweight. Her last 2 wins at strawweight against Marina Rodriguez and Mackenzie Dern. So she's back in her weight class. I think she's going to find some success here when she takes on Lupi Godinez. Lupi coming in, 31 years old from Mexico, actually trains out of Lobo Gym. Diego Lopez, Alexa Grasso, and Irene Aldana. A lot of top contenders in their respective divisions. She also has 3 submissions of her 13 wins. That's right, never been finished. Has 3 submissions. That's all she's ever done. Pretty sucky. But I will say 2 of them have came in the UFC. As of late, you know, 2-1, 1-2. 1-2, so not the best. Lost to Virna Jandidova in 2024 and Mackenzie Dern in 2024. Fought once in March and took on Julia Polastri in short notice and grappled her to death. 7.5 minutes of control time, 5 of 11 on takedowns. Look, Lupe is getting a big shot here. Most people are going to probably ride with her, but I'm riding with Andrade. I think she strives at the strawweight division. I think she is much more able to overcome grappling especially in this division. And this isn't no Tatiana Suarez situation. No Loopy. I hate to say it. This is going to be too big for her. I got Jessica Andrade actually knocking her out. I think this is going to be one of the most finish-heavy prelims with high-level matchups that we've seen so far this year. So my prediction, Jessica Andrade, round one knockout of Loopy Godinez. Maybe not an actual knockout. Maybe just a lot of pressure up against the cage, eating shots, and the ref steps in. But with that, we move on. We move on. And next up, fun one, middleweight division. They just kind of threw this on here. You know, this doesn't really match the vibe at all with all these rigged people. But GM3, Gerald Meerschaert, and Husar Michael Olika Jacek, his nickname is Husar, in action. This one's just going to be fun. This one's just going to be a good time. Gerald Meerschaert, 37-19. Dude has over 50 professional fights. This will be his 57th. Michael Olika Jacek, 20-9 with one no contest. 6'1 to 6'1 inch in height for Gerald. 3 inches in reach as well. 77-74. Southpaw stance. You get two Southpaw boys going at it. Gerald, plus 190. Michael, minus 230. So Gerald's coming in here, 37 years old, fighting out of Wisconsin. 6 KOs and 29 subs give him 35 of his 37 wins by finish. Insane. Utterly insane. Of his 19 defeats, he's been finished 13 times. 9 by sub, 4 by knockout. Crazy. Crazy. And Gerald Meerschaert, yet another guy who has just had one of the most insane runs I've seen in the UFC. Only been the distance 5 times. Now, let me just say, as of late, 2-fight losing streak, lost to Brad Tavares in April, got submitted by Rainer de Ritter in November, but before that, 2-fight winning streak. You know, he actually holds the most submission wins in middleweight history, I'm pretty sure. Comes in, 2 straight round one submissions, great work, and gets knocked out by Thiago Santos. Then, knockout, finish, gets submitted by Jack Hermanson. Loses a split decision to Kevin Holland. Then submits Trevin Giles. Then loses a split decision to Eric Andres. Then gets a submission. And then gets knocked out in a minute. Then gets knocked out in 17 seconds by Khabib Nurmagomedov. Then 3-fight finish streak coming in 1, 2, and 3. Round 1, guillotine choke. Round 2, rear naked choke. Round 3, a rear naked choke. Then loses a decision. Then gets a round 3 submission by Bruno Silva. And then gets knocked out by Joe Pyfer. Then beats Andre Petroski in a split decision. Oh, loses to Andre Petroski in a split decision. Then submits Brian Barberina and Edmund Chabazin. So Gerald, it's just been crazy. Crazy run for Gerald. And he is just a legendary fighter. And if we're ever going to see a journeyman fighting, he's a fun one to watch. I will say the Brad Tavares fight sucked. I mean, they literally did nothing in that fight, so that's certainly a doozy. But hopefully, Michael Olika Jacek can bring the fun energy out of him here. Michael is 30 years old from Poland, but now fights out of Sao Paulo, Brazil. He also joined the Fighting Nerds. 15 KOs and 1 sub give him 16 of his 20 wins. By finish, and of his 9 defeats, he's been finished 7 times, 6 by sub. Yikes. Michael debuted in 2017, having an overturned win over Khalil Roundtree Jr. That sucks. That's a crappy win to have overturned. Followed that up with 2 round 1 knockouts before getting submitted by Ovin St. Preux and Jimmy Crute. He would then beat Modestus Bukauskas by split decision and knock out Shamil Gamzadov in 2021. He would then drop a decision against Dustin Jacoby before landing 2 round 1 knockouts of Sam Alvey and Cody Brundage. Then we'd enter this modern era, the 2023 to 2025 version of Michael Olika Jacek. And from April of 2023 to August of 2024, he just had a killer's row. Okay, has to take on Kyle Barallo. Gets a layup against Gideon Chukani, who he beats. Then fights Michelle Pereira, submitted. Fights Kevin Holland, submitted. Fights Shaun Magomedov, loses a fight of the night. So literally his last 4 defeats. Okay, Kyle Barallo, who's literally fighting in the main event in Paris. Michelle Pereira, who just had a fight night. Kevin Holland, we know Kevin Holland. Shaun Magomedov, we know Shaun Magomedov, all right? Came back, took some time off, fought at UFC 314 this year. Under a 3-minute knockout of Cedric Dumas, who is still getting UFC fights. Who keeps giving Cedric Dumas UFC fights? But Michael, he's been training with the Fighting Nerds, appears to have improved. And I'll tell you something, Gerald's chin occasionally fails him. And I think Michael Olika Jacek gets a knockout in this one. Gerald is obviously probably going to be everyone's underdog pick. And he's a great underdog pick. But I just can't lie. I'm just riding with Michael Olika Jacek. My gut is telling me Michael. So I got to ride with Michael. We don't go against our gut when it comes to predictions. Moving on to our final prelim of the evening. Wow, we've been talking about prelims for a minute. Lightweight division, King Green, a.k.a. Bobby Green, takes on Diego Ferreira. Bobby King, I guess his name's King Green. He legally changed his name to King. 32-17-1 with one no contest for King Green. Diego Ferreira, 19-6. 1 inch in height for King, 5'10-5'9". 3 inches in reach for Diego, 74-71. King, I can't believe I'm calling him King. King Green! 15 coming in, plus 170. Digafera, minus 200. The former name of Bobby Green, now going by King, is 38 years old from Cali. And of his 32 wins, has 20 finishes, 11 KOs and 9 subs. Of his 17 defeats, he's been finished 9 times, 6 by knockout, 3 by sub. Yeah. Bobby King Green, one, his name's King Green. I'm so sorry. I'm going to keep calling him Bobby. I do not care. 1-3 for Green over his last four, coming off of a terrible loss against Mauricio Ruffi earlier this year in March. I mean, he literally got put on a highlight reel, a spinning freaking wheel kick. That'll do it to you. Before that, submitted by Paddy Pimblett, beat Jim Miller on UFC 300, but before that was knocked out brutally by Jalen Turner. This dude's had a crazy run as well, was fighting in the Affliction days in 2009. That was pre-Strikeforce, all right? And then he did fight in Strikeforce. He's taken on a lot of tough names over the years. Dustin Poirier, Edson Barbosa, Clay Guida, Rafael Fiziev, Ally Aquinta, Islam Makhachev, Tony Ferguson, for goodness sakes. This dude's fought a lot of tough people. Now, in his last run, you know, I will say his last wins are over Jim Miller, Grant Dawson, and Tony Ferguson, a shell of Tony. The Grant Dawson one, very valid, but the Jim Miller one, you know, wasn't too impressive. So, King Green coming off of two-fight losing streak. These are the top-level contenders. We'll see how he does against Diego Ferreira. Diego coming in 40 years old from Brazil, but now trains and fights out of Texas, actually for his MMA. Notable gym. 5 KOs and 7 subs give him 12 of his 19 wins by finish, and of his 6 defeats, he's been knocked out 3 times. Been with the UFC for 11 years now, and yeah, only real people to beat him in the UFC, Beneil Dariush, Dustin Poirier, Gregor Gilseppe, Matheus Gamrot, and Grant Dawson. So, really tough competitors that he's beaten. His last two wins, Michael Johnson in May of 2023. Can't believe that knockout was 2 years ago. Such a good knockout. And then May of 2024, beat Matheus Rebecca. Had one fight earlier this year in January and was grappled to death by Grant Dawson. 6 takedowns landed for Grant, 11 minutes of control time. Yikes. But Diego Ferreira is usually in dogfights. I mean, the Matheus Gamrot fight, Gregor Gilseppe fight, Beneil Dariush fight, Anthony Pettis fight. I could go on and on and on. This dude is always in tough fights. Now, I think this is 50-50. Flip of a coin. It depends which version of these fighters show up. I think Diego Ferreira is going to show up. I think Diego Ferreira is going to perform here and get a unanimous decision victory. But if King Green wants to show up, be my guest. But we are riding with Diego Ferreira as a minus 200 favorite. I just think grappling-wise, he's better. And when it comes to power punching, I'm going to ride with him as well. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, we move on from the prelims to the main card. The main card here, and it is a good main card. It is a very unorthodox main card. You know, it had a lot of moving pieces. You had Gaethje and Paddy Pimblett linked to this event. You had Mosvar Evlov linked to this event. But then, nonetheless, you've ended up with the card we have today. And kicking things off, we head to the flyweight division as the number 15th ranked Kai Asakura takes on the number 11th ranked Tim Elliott in the flyweight division. Tim is 21-13 with one draw. Kai Asakura, 21-5. 5'8 to 5'7, 1 inch in height for Kai and 3 inches in reach, 69-66. Southpaw for Tim, orthodox for Kai Asakura. And Tim Elliott, plus 235, big underdog, minus 285. Kai is the favorite. Tim Elliott just became one of my favorite fighters. He posted this hilarious video on Twitter of him in his hotel room saying, get ready for the fight. And I don't know if it's his girlfriend, his wife, maybe just the lady he was seeing, but some naked tattooed woman, you can only see her behind, is changing, and you can just see liquor bottles, might even see a pot of weed or something on the table, and I'm just like, Tim Elliott, what are you doing, you bloody legend? But coming in, he's ranked number 11, he's 38, can't believe it, from Kansas, now trains out of Missouri, 10 finishes of his 21 wins, 3 KOs, and 7 subs of his 13 defeats, he's been finished 7 times, 6 by sub, somehow, once he's been finished by knockout. He was actually supposed to fight Tatsuo Taira May 18th, 2024, but that never materialized. He did lose a grappling match in March of this year. I think it was March 30th, 2025. But his official last MMA fight was December 2023 when he submitted Suma Darji. Last loss came October 2023 to Muhammad Mokaev. So it's been a while since we've actually seen Tim Elliott. And I will say Tim Elliott has 13 defeats. He has, 11 of them in the UFC. But, you know, the guys he's lost to, John Dodson, Joseph Benavidez, Demetrius Johnson, Devson Figueiredo, Brandon Royval, Matthias Nicola, like, he's lost to tough opponents. We don't really know what versions are going to show up. This dude hasn't fought in almost 2 years officially, but, you know, he tried to stay active last year, got a grappling match, and now here he is. Tim Elliott, the legend who once won a little tournament, I think, or something, to fight Demetrius Johnson. You know, he actually fought Demetrius Johnson coming off of 3 straight losses, because I think it was he actually went on the Ultimate Fighter, and whoever won the Ultimate Fighter got to fight Demetrius Johnson, and, you know, he actually took down Demetrius 4 times, so there's a win in its own. His opponent, Kai Asakura, back for his second attempt in the UFC. 31 years old from Tokyo, Japan. 16 of his 21 wins by finish, 13 KOs and 3 subs, and of his 5 defeats, he's been finished 4 times, 3 by knockout, 2 by sub. I say second attempt in the UFC because he originally lost in December. He was submitted by Alexander Pantoa in 2 minutes in round 2, and Alexander made it look easy. Now, I thought Kai would come in and get it done, and, you know, he came in throwing his high knees, throwing smart punches, but Pantoa is just too freaking good. And I've been noticing a trend here. I really have. You know, I noticed it with Patchy Mix. I noticed it especially with Patricio Pitbull. It's guys cannot come in and win and find success coming in from other promotions, nonetheless taking on top-level talent. So I should have known better than the pick Kai Asakura there, but here, Kai has recently fought. He is much more proven than Tim Elliott and the guys he's fought in one, and I think the knockout power, especially from not fighting a while, is going to hurt Tim Elliott. Round 1 knockout for Kai Asakura, and this will propel him into a top 10 matchup later in the year. People are even saying winner of this should fight Steve Ursig. I completely agree, but Tim Elliott comes back, wins, yeah, give this guy a top 10 opponent. That would be impressive. But I think Kai Asakura runs through Tim Elliott, and Tim can go back to his tattooed mistress in his hotel room. Moving on up to the middleweight division. And no, it's not the main event. Instead, you have the number 9 rank. Now, ooh, they bumped him down. Jared Cannonier. And number 9, taking on MVP Michael Venom Page. That's right, the Killer Gorilla is taking on MVP. Michael Venom Page is back up at middleweight, and he's getting a big shot against the number 9 ranked Jared Cannonier. Jared is 18-8 professionally. MVP is 23-3. 4 inches in height for MVP, 6'3 to 5'11, and 2 inches in reach, 79-77. Switch stance for both of them. Always love to see that. Cannonier, by some facet, is an underdog at plus 155, and MVP is the favorite at minus 175. My eyes are not deceiving me. Cannonier, 41 years old, of course, from Arizona, trains at the MMA Lab. We mentioned them earlier. 13 of his 18 wins by finish, 10 KOs and 3 subs, and of his 8 defeats, he's been finished by knockout 3 times. Cannonier has had a crazy run, you know, over a 10-year career in the UFC, comes in at heavyweight, you know, goes 1-1, then goes to light heavyweight, ends up going, I think it was like 2-3 or something, wasn't good. Moves down to middleweight, 3-fight knockout streak, eventually gets a shot against Robert Whittaker, loses. Then wins a fight night against Calvin Gastelum, knocks out Derek Brunson, dominant form, and gets a title shot against Izzy. One of the worst fights I've ever seen, so boring. Then beats Sean Strickland, beats Marvin Vettori, takes on Nazarene Imavov, and loses. Then takes on Cabralo and loses even more brutally. But then comes back February and has one of the greatest comebacks I've seen. Gets dropped twice in round 1 by Gregor Rodriguez. Comes back, knocks him out 21 seconds into round 4. The Killer Gorilla at 41 years is still getting knockout victories. I can't believe it. You know, I really thought Gregor Rodriguez would get him out of there, but no, Cannonier is still in it. So I understand maybe he's the underdog because of the losses, but those losses are literally the two guys main eventing UFC Paris, and the winner of them gets a title shot. His last 2 losses are two guys who the winner is guaranteed to get a title shot. So I do want to give him a bit of slack on that, but Cannonier, ranked at number 9, he gets to take on MVP. Michael Page is somehow just getting golden opportunities. I'm really surprised. 38 years old, from London, England, 16 of his 23 wins by finish, 12 KOs and 4 subs, and he's only ever been finished once by knockout, but it's about to be 2, let me tell you that. MVP debuted in March of 2024 and put on a boring performance against Kevin Holland. He would come back in June of 2024 and lose a boring decision to Ian Garry, and then in February, he'd become the first man to ever beat Shahram Magomedov in a boring decision. That's right. Of the 9 rounds I've seen of MVP, none of them have been exciting. Now, he has wonky hits at times, he has big moves, but I mean, dude honestly does nothing. He really doesn't. And I think Cannonier is bringing that power with him. He's also going to bring in maybe some takedowns, which you won't expect. And I'm going to be honest, of every fight on this card, every single fight, if MVP wins, I am going to be unbelievably shocked. Okay, this is the one fight. I mean, so I'm locking my pick, Jared Cannonier, round two knockout, locking him for me. But I kid you not, I could see DDP beating Khamzat. I could see Lerone Murphy losing Aaron Pico. I could see Carlos Prates getting knocked out by Jeff Neal before I see Jared Cannonier lose to MVP. I will be very shocked. I will be very amiss, but that is my thoughts right here. And when we come back on Sunday or Monday and I'm talking about, oh my gosh, I can't believe MVP knocked out Cannonier, I'll go, wow, I never saw that coming. But yeah, Cannonier over MVP, that's my prediction. Moving on to the big three, if you want to call it. This whole main card's pretty good, but Jeff Neal, Carlos Prates, fantastic, fantastic. People were waiting for this matchup, and now we're getting it. It's what we were originally supposed to have until Carlos took on that fight against Ian Garry. But the number 11th ranked Jeff Hands of Steel Neal takes on the nightmare, the number 12 ranked Carlos Prates. Jeff Neal, 16-6, Carlos, 21-7. 2 inches a night for Carlos, 6'1 to 5'11, and 3 inches a reach for Carlos, 78-75. Southpaw for Neal, switch stands for the nightmare, Prates. Jeff Neal, plus 210, Prates, minus 245. Of course, Prates is the favorite. What more would you expect? Jeff Neal, 34 years old from Texas. He has 12 finishes of those 16 wins, 10 KOs and 2 subs. And of his 6 defeats, he's only ever been finished 3 times. Yes, these two are actually linked to a fight at UFC 314. Funny enough. Jeff Neal, last time he fought, October 2024, got a 90-second TKO win over Rafael dos Anjos due to injury. Before that, lost a split decision to Ian Garry and got submitted in a fight of the night by Shavkat Rakhmonov. Jeff has been around since 2017 and hasn't been too active. You know, he at one point was on a 5-fight winning streak in the UFC, coming off of knockouts of Nico Price and Mike Perry before getting humbled by Wonderboy and Neil Magny in back-to-back fights. Would beat Santiago Ponzinibbio and become the first man ever to knock out Vicente Luque. Okay, but yeah, as of late, 1-2, only win is over RDA. We'll see how the 34-year-old does against the nightmare, Carlos Prates. 31 years old, from Brazil, one of the OGs of the fighting nerds. Of those 21 wins, 19 finishes, 16 KOs and 3 subs. Of his 7 defeats, 5 of them he's been finished in. Twice by knockout, 3 by sub. And he is my 2024 Rookie of the Year, Debut Fighter of the Year, whatever you want to call them. Went 4-0 in 2024 with 4 knockouts, 4 performance bonuses. That's right. This man made 200 grand in bonuses last year. Insane. Had one fight earlier this year in April, of course, losing to Ian Garry, but he turned it on late. He was just too gassed out. And in the interviews afterwards, Prates said, look, I didn't really know how to handle a 5-round fight. I had never had one before. And I thought that I had to wait to turn on the gas tank. And I waited too long. I got gassed out. He was already ahead. And I just couldn't get it done. But don't worry, Prates. We're back to 3 rounds. We're back to our knockout ways. And Jeff Neal, I give maximum 2.5 minutes in round number 2 before Prates gets him out of there. Yeah, light work at the office for Carlos Prates. Give me a round 2 knockout or even round 1 knockout over Jeff Neal all freaking day. I will be very sad if Carlos gets knocked out. I'm a Carlos Prates fan, and I hope he gets this one done. Following that, we get to our co-main event as the number 6 ranked featherweight, Lerone Murphy, welcomes the debuting Aaron Pico. That is right. Finally in the UFC is Aaron Pico, and, you know, I cannot believe that he is a favorite to this. Minus 135 for Pico, plus 115 for Lerone Murphy, and the odds are growing. I'm so shocked. I'm so shocked by this, and I can merely tell you right now, I fell for the Casicura trap, I fell for the Pitbull trap, I fell for the Patchy Mix trap, the worst trap of all. I am not falling for the Aaron Pico trap. No, no, no. 16-0 with 1 draw for Lerone Murphy. 13-4 for Aaron Pico. Knockout cans. It won't get it done. For Lerone, 34 years old from Lancashire, England. 7 KOs of his 16 wins. That's all we got. But, dude, he is freaking 8-0 in the UFC. He has strung together an impressive winning streak. Does have 2 finishes and a fight of the night on this route. Last 2 wins, Dan Ige, and most recently in April, Josh Emmett in a main event. So Lerone Murphy has just been tested over and over and over. And here comes Aaron Pico waltzing his way in, the 28-year-old from Cali on a 3-fight winning streak. He has 11 finishes of his 13 wins, 9 KOs, and 2 subs. And all of his losses, he's been finished in. 3 by knockout, 2 by sub. And by the way, of those 3 knockouts, almost all the knockouts he was completely put out by. He was supposed to fight Mosfar Yavlov in Abu Dhabi. Mosfar pulled out, which is funny because Mosfar might get a title shot. I don't know. But yeah, I'm just going to be honest. I don't know much about Aaron Pico. I saw some of his highlights. Yeah, he has some nasty knockouts. But if Lerone Murphy makes it all the way, like 8-0 in the UFC, grinding, fighting Edson Barboza, fighting Dan Ige, fighting Josh Emmett, to lose to Aaron Pico, it would be humiliating. I not only think Lerone's going to win, I think you might see a Lerone Murphy finish. The rare Lerone Murphy finish is so available here, so free to have. I really hope he can get it. But yeah, we're riding with Lerone Murphy in this one. At 34 years old, he is somehow a prospect. I saw a funny thing. It was talking about how Brandon Moreno's like 31 years old, or actually Max Holloway's 33 years old and is a veteran, and Lerone Murphy is a prospect at 34 years old. It's just funny how MMA works like that. But yeah, give me Lerone Murphy by any means necessary. Definitely maybe a knockout even in round number two. But yeah, no shot in round there. And Pico, we're done picking Bellator and PFL, guys. That's for certain. All right, we're here. We're there. We made it through the whole card. It's time. It's time. One of the biggest main events of the year, the number four pound-for-pound fighter on the planet, the current reigning defending middleweight champion, 9-0 in the UFC, takes on the villain, the hungry, the dangerous, the undefeated Boars, the number three ranked Hamza Chimaev. That's right. Insane stuff from both of these guys. I mean, this is massive. This is a massive main event. I mean, this is bigger than 318. You could argue this is better than 317, bigger than 360, 350. This could be the biggest main event of the year. And I kid you not, when the bell rings, I cannot wait to see what happens. Are you going to see Hamzat charge across? Are you going to see DDP charge across? What are we going to see? I don't know. It's going to be pandemonium. DDP plus 170 is the underdog. Hamzat Chimaev minus 210 is your favorite. Driscus Duplessis, 9-0 in the UFC, 23-2 professionally, and he is riding an 11-fight winning streak. Hamzat Chimaev, 14-0, and he is 8-0 in the UFC. 1-inch in height for Hamzat, 6'2-6'1. 1-inch reach for DDP, 76-75. Switch stance for DDP, orthodox for Hamzat Chimaev. Both gentlemen are 31 years of age. Very similar. Very similar, I'll tell you that. The champion, Driscus Duplessis, coming in this one from South Africa. Of his 23 wins, he has 20 wins by finish, 9 kills, and 11 subs, and he's just been on absolute tear since coming into the UFC in 2020, getting round one knockouts, round two knockouts, turning Brad Tavares' bleach blonde hair red from beating him so badly, getting Darren Till fired from the UFC for beating him so badly, finishing Derek Brunson by exhaustion, knocking out Robert Whittaker, taking the belt from Sean Strickland in a fight of the night, submitting Adesanya, and then most recently put on the most boring main event of the year against Sean Strickland, but you know, nonetheless, beat him. So DDP is on a tear. His style is unorthodox. You know, people question how he has become this great, but he is this great through pure determination, and he is skillful. He hits hard, his great takedown defense, and I think, you know, he's going to be a problem. I mean, his takedown defense right now is at 50%. Ooh, I didn't even realize that. For Hamza, it's 100%. I didn't even realize that. But yeah, DDP still knocks is the nickname, and he still hopes to keep on knocking as he comes in here for his third title defense. Now, unfortunately, this ain't no Adesanya. This ain't no Sean Strickland. This ain't even a Robert Whittaker. This is Boars. This is Hamzat Chimaev, and the 31-year-old from Chechnya, Russia, who now fights out of the United Arab Emirates, has 6 KOs and 6 subs out of his 14 professional wins. And of his 14 wins, he has 9 round 1 finishes. And by the way, in the UFC, he has 5 round 1 finishes. This dude's a killer. I mean, he has all but 2 fights where he hasn't had a post-fight bonus, yes, is what I'm looking to say, and he's been a killer. You know, comes in from July of 2020 to September 2020, 3 wins, amazing. Gets 1 fight in October 2021 after dealing with COVID, destroys Li Jingliang. Then fights Gilbert Burns, first time he's ever gone the distance, fight of the year contender. Then deals with the weight issues surrounding his fight with Nate Diaz, ends up fighting Kevin Holland, dismantles him in 2 minutes. Is supposed to take on Paulo Costa, instead takes on Kamaru Usman on a week's notice and beats him by majority decision. Following that, he takes a full year off, dealing with weight issues and such, comes back, fights Robert Whittaker, dismantles him, snaps his jaw in 3.5 minutes, and now he has a title shot. Hamzat's insane. Hamzat is insane, and man, this is going to be crazy. This is going to be crazy. Now, so many things can happen here, and I think it all just comes down to, will DDP stop the first takedown of Hamzat Chimaev? No, these two are probably going to go and stand, and they're going to be punching, and then Hamzat's going to shoot. And unlike, you know, Robert Whittaker didn't answer, Kamaru Usman, thankfully, you know, Hamzat was able to break his hand in round one. That's the only reason this went farther than two rounds against Usman. And what was I trying? Like, Kamaru Usman got lucky that Hamzat broke his hand because he couldn't stop the takedowns. He got 10-8 in round number one. So Hamzat is going to shoot, and if DDP can stop it, keep it on the feet, that's where he'll find success. But if not, Hamzat is going to beat him. And let me just tell you, I'm riding with Hamzat, man. I am riding with Hamzat Chimaev. I didn't even know if Hamzat was going to get a title fight this year. I honestly didn't. I was confused. I was like, are they going to give it to him? I don't know. And nonetheless, he's getting one here. And I don't think he's going to waste his opportunity. It is currently Wednesday at 12:45 Central Time. And we are still hoping Hamzat can make weight for this fight. There's no reason he shouldn't, one would say. But yeah, Hamzat Chimaev is he wants to become a three-division champion. Let's focus on just becoming a middleweight champion. Alrighty. So Hamzat Chimaev, round one submission of DDP. It's there, it's available, and I might as well go for it. I mean, I don't know. And by the way, DDP has the best chance of beating Hamzat Chimaev. I don't actually know a single other fighter in the UFC who could, especially in the middleweight division, who could prove even a challenge to Hamzat Chimaev, okay? So DDP's the last hope, because if Hamzat wins, it's going to be the reign of the Chechnyan for a while. So Hamzat to end UFC 319 as the new middleweight champion, my official prediction. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, that's all I got. All I got on today's episode, a lot of fun stuff, movies, UFC 319. I just realized we talked about UFC 319 for almost an hour. That's crazy. I still was going to go on a long run. Actually, I can still go on a long run. Why not? But yeah, let me know who you guys are going to be riding with. Shoot me a message. Let me know what other things you want me to talk about. But yeah, UFC 319 is going to be action-packed, and I'm so excited to watch it. Going down in Chicago, Illinois. Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, I send you on your way, and you know the spiel. I say it every episode. I'll catch you next time on The Surprise Jab Podcast.